welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back, and it is now or never, and that debt is fraud, and please make your appeals as fervently and regularly as you possibly can. We can never under-appeal to heaven. So, with that, your campaign begins when you lift your head, you open your eyes, you get back into your campaign, because you should already be there. You should already be helping people understand. Because I deal with folks. There was a great gentleman. I think his name was Larry. I'm really bad with names. From Oklahoma, who actually gave me the legislators' email addresses. And unfortunately, I never got a lot of the emails out just due to the fact that I was swamped. And then, you know, everything went sideways. So, bottom line, I will get those things out. They're going to be kind of behind the eight ball on that, and that's my fault. But what I want to say is that here's a gentleman that helped me out, and he's actually trying to get other people to listen to the show. I appreciate that. I, you know, offer him and I offer every one of you the opportunity. I will help you if you're willing to actually create a link where we can have a meeting. In other words, you can create your own free conference call account, and you will host the meeting. And you know, you don't need to, you know, give me any of the information of all these other people that'll be there. I'll see whatever their names, phone number. I mean, I'll get that little bit, and I don't care. I don't keep it. I don't even write it down. And as a case in point, last week, a gentleman out of Iowa, who I always see his number, I recognize his phone number. I never wrote it down. I don't do that because I've got enough people that actually want help. And the problem is that it's only getting worse. That's a good problem to have. And I'm welcoming it still. So the point is that I've offered to him, I'm offering to you the same thing. If I'll help you create that account with free conference call, I'll help you get everything set up so that you can start hosting the meeting. You call all your friends in the state that you know. Hopefully they're in different counties. Hopefully you can call and you can touch. We can get connected with leaders that are already engaged in some capacity in the party, or at least in some patriot, you know, vitriol with emails, whatever it is. Let's start having these educational meetings so that people, so we can all get on board. Because I can't get people. There's no way in heck anybody will become a buy-in, a person that is all in, until they actually see the details of what you got to do. And I'm confident if you're truly a patriot and you are a lover of liberty, you will get behind this. Reasonable people, equally informed, seldom disagree. That's why we want to get people informed with these critical documents and so forth. So let's empower people. Let's give them the education. So let's start getting this moving. Your campaign can begin in this fashion. It doesn't even have to be going and filing with a political campaign. This is a campaign for liberty. Okay? All right. Welcome back, Tammy. I made it through the obligatories. How about that, huh? Huh? Pretty good?
Sounds great.
I mean, usually I you know, it takes way too much time, and I want to get better at that. And so we kind of left off, if you remember, and help me out here. What was the last part you read regarding, was it Mr. Davey, or did we not get to Davey? Oh, you know what? Actually, we got through that, but you're right. So that's where I got cut off, because I was saying that this is how it carried. It actually carried over that the members approved by ballot were Mr. Governor Morris, Mr. Gorham, Mr. Randolph, Mr. Rutledge, and Mr. King would go off and do this. So in other words, that was, I guess, the committee. And so Mr. Wilson is next, and this is the last line before we jump down into the next area. But this is they're talking about admission, and so admission and the states and property and those types of things were all tied together, and we're going to jump down to another area where they talk about property and then get into the admission of states. So let's go ahead and read Mr. Wilson, and then we'll take the next jump, okay?
I'm not sure where you're at.
Oh, okay. So I'm sorry. We're on, let me see. Well, do you know where Mr. Davy of North Carolina was? Okay. So
aren't we in July 9th?
So no, this is on July 6th.
Oh, we were July 9th.
Or hold on here. Hold on here. Hold on here. Yeah. So this is on July 6th. Hold it. We jump down. I'm sorry. My bad. Mr. Gorham. So that's where we got to. So
we were on Mr. Sherman.
Yeah. So we're on Mr. Sherman. You're absolutely correct. The vote that they just had that didn't carry, or actually it did carry, but New York, New Jersey were against it and everybody else is for it. Okay. So my bad. I got confused. I love being right, though. Okay. Okay. So Mr. Sherman is basically there's we're still talking about admission of states and those types of things. So let's go ahead and see what Mr. Sherman says.
Mr. Sherman wished to know on what principles or calculations the report was founded. It did not appear to correspond with any rule of numbers or of any requisition hitherto adopted by Congress. Do you want me to keep going, Mr. Gorham?
Yeah, so go ahead.
Mr. Gorham, some provision of this sort was necessary in the outset. The number of blacks and whites with some regard to supposed wealth was the general guide. Fractions could not be observed. The legislature is to make alterations from time to time as justice and property propriety may require. Two objections prevailed against the rate of one member for every 40,000 inhabitants. The first was that the representation would soon be too numerous. The second was that the western states, who may have a different interest, might, if admitted on that principle by degrees, outvote the Atlantic. Both of these objections are removed. The number will be small in the first instance and maybe continued so, and the Atlantic states, having the governor in their own hands, may take care of their own interest by dealing out of the right of representation in safe proportions to the western states. These were the views of the committee.
Okay, so Mr. Gorham, so what state was he from? I'm looking. He was from Massachusetts. So he was from a small state. And I think anybody would realize that Massachusetts would probably not be able to keep up in population with states that have larger properties, right? So mm-hmm. I honestly can see why Massachusetts, Delaware, these small states. Now, how many? What's the representation in help me out here, in Massachusetts? Do you know off the top of your head?
I don't.
So, I think I actually have an Electoral College map, and so let me see here, see if I can pull it up, because if I can find my Electoral College map for 2024, which I just did, actually this is 2018, but it's probably not going to be too far off because I actually have it somewhere else, but Massachusetts at this point in time has 11 electoral votes, which means that they have 9. For a state that's been in the union for as long as it has, I wouldn't think that that's, you know, a great number. As a matter of fact, when we look at the range of where they go in numbers, they are ranked 36th, tied, you know, for 9, so they're the 36th state, and there's 4 states that have 9 representatives. but there are this many states, and I'll tell you that have more than them. It is 13. So there's 13 states now: Washington State, Virginia, New Jersey. See, Washington State's new to the union, and they're a larger state. They're going to continue to grow. Virginia, of course, they already had a larger. And as a matter of fact, Virginia's representation really went down. What do I mean by that? So what was the original allocation? Do you remember out of the Constitution? You know, of course you remember, right? I'm sorry. So Article 1, Section 2 lays out what the enumeration is going to be. And it says Virginia will have 10 representatives in the House of Representatives in Congress the first year. So when we look at the next apportionment and how it changed dramatically. And if anybody goes to Wikipedia and looks at the representation in Congress from the very first year of 1789 to today, because they'll show you every session and how many representatives were in each state. Virginia grew and grew and grew. How did they go down? Because the union grew in states, and every state was guaranteed one representative. And because they have, I mean, Virginia's not that huge, right?
Yeah, I know.
I mean, it's not big like California and Texas. And so when we look at the states that are really dominating in population, or I should say in representation, California, Texas, Florida, New York, and then Illinois, Pennsylvania, Ohio, Georgia, the Carolinas, Michigan, New Jersey, then Virginia. And so the point is that our representation has been flawed because of the way Congress has applied it. Because they've given a greater advantage to the size of greater populations, even though that was the design, but the design was to have adequate representation, not allowing it to slide this way to where we actually we don't have better representation today. We have worse because you're competing with three quarters of a million people for your representative to hear what you have to say and for them to consider what you have to say. If you're not contributing to their campaign, you're nothing to them.
Yeah, that's true.
So when we really look at the fact, having a smaller representation allotment, in other words, 30, 50, something, no more than 50, and we can do it, then you're actually going to be represented. But if all of a sudden that changes, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but if you want, I do have the population. And I can give you the population of each state, which would, if we actually had 50,000, so if you had a state with, you know, 5,057,000 people, then they would have a representation of, you know, whatever that, because you're 57, you would actually get a representative to represent that 7,000 people, but that would be divided amongst all of them. You'd try to make your congressional districts, as a matter of fact, the smart planning, because you don't want to have to change it every 10 years. Now, those who like to do gerrymandering love to change it every 10 years, but what you want to do is you understand where the areas of growth are, the hot areas that are growing, and you kind of give them the advantage to grow. In other words, leave out, you know, make those instead of 50,000, you make them 40,000 or 35,000 to spread across a couple of them, because you know that they're going to grow. And the rest of them, so none of the congressional districts would actually have 50,000, because if you have that kind of play, you can do that. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
You have a certain because it, whatever that comes out of, and folks, just do the math on 50,057,000. And so that would come out to a certain amount. I mean, what is a million in 50 divided by 50,000? Well, that would be 20. So 20 times 5 would be 100, and that would be 102 totals. beer math, right? All right, so 102 representatives. Now you have a lot of representatives to play with where you could actually allocate, you know, the areas of growth to where they actually have a little area to grow where you don't have to redo those. What you want to do, and what's more important, what's the most important thing about creating congressional districts is to maintain community. You have to understand that when all the people started settling, they settled together for a reason. And this is why gerrymandering was looked at as a maniacal process, because you were splitting communities to where you were creating disadvantages to big sects of communities because you were moving them in with other communities that they didn't really agree with politically.
Yeah.
That's what gerrymandering does. And when we, if we go back to 50,000, though, it would make it really hard, because that actually, in most cases, as a matter of fact, I have the population up, and I think I just recently did this, the county population, and because I just did it by state. And what I will do is I'll actually do it descending. And so I'll go down to 50,000, and I'll be able to tell you in just a matter of, it's just about a second or so. Well, give me a little more time, but it's going to be a couple thousand. So we're looking at how many counties would that be that would have at least one representative, at least one representative, right? And so I can tell you how many counties would not have one representative, and that would be a total of 2,152. So the other, and when I look at what that other be, that other is 991 counties would have at least one representative within the county, and then they would start splitting representatives between counties. Their counties below would actually have to start sharing their representative, their congressional district, with another county. When you get down to some of these states, like in Texas, when you actually look at, you know, there, I'm looking at one, two, three, I don't know how many in Texas. I can actually tell you. The beautiful thing about creating a spreadsheet and then going through the numbers and everything else, I can actually tell you how many counties would not even come close, not even come close to 50,000, right? So that there would be this many counties, and this, I'm going to just take it up to 10,000, because when you're talking about less than 50,000 people in the county, my question is, and Tammy, do you believe, we've gone down a rat hole, so forgive me for this, do you believe a county can self-sustain itself in today's governing with 10,000 people or less? Now, not 10,000 households. 10,000 people or less, because they're counting children and everything else, right? So if you have...
No, definitely not.
So you, if you take the, you know, 2 and 1, 10,000 divided by 3, you're looking at 3,000 households. Could 3,000 households fund your judge? Could they fund your commissioners? Could they fund, in other words, pay the salaries and benefits and everything else for a sheriff and all of these people, the clerk, all of these people to govern you? And I'm you're right. And I'm going to guess that these are very rural counties where there's not a lot of money, and the average or the cost of living is going to be a lot lower than what a sheriff would even be willing to work for. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay.
We constantly talk about that in this county.
Yep. And so we look at, so that's why Wyoming really has to figure out how to do your counties, because if you've got counties that are supplemented, then they aren't real counties. They're welfare counties. And sometimes states and governments like to do that. But going back to this map here, and putting the smallest to the largest, when I look at Texas, the smallest population, inhabitants, 63 in a county.
63 people.
63 people.
Oh, people. Wow.
So Loving County, Texas, I'm not picking on them, but they're the smallest populated county. There's no way they're paying for their sheriff. There's no way those 63 people are paying for the government that they have. Everybody else in Texas is subsidizing that county. And you have big, vast rural areas, like in California. You've got these big deserts. And so split up, you know, split these things up. Or if you want to make all the desert dwellers of their own county, then stretch it all the way up from Mexico in California all the way up to Sacramento or wherever they are, you know. But the point is that you want to make sure that government can sustain itself as well as keeping people together. The only reason I went down this path is because gerrymandering is designed to split up communities. So that you throw people into communities they don't agree with, or you start intermixing those things politically. And that's not right. And that's why the courts have kind of stepped up and said gerrymandering isn't right. But the way they apply it and the way they look at it today, they use it to their advantage, which is the progressive advantage, because the corruption has done that. And that's why we're dealing with all of the problems we are. And that's why we go through this. So back to the reading. I think I'm pulling myself out of the rat hole here. So let's go back and keep on going.
With Mr. Martin?
Yep.
Okay. Mr. Martin wished to know whether the, what's that one stand for? Committee?
Which one's the? Yes, commie. Committee. Hmm?
Committee, okay. Mr. Martin wished to know whether the committee were guided in the ratio by the wealth or number of inhabitants of the states or by both, noting its variations from the former apportionments of Congress.
Right.
Mr. Governor Morse and Mr. Rutledge moved to postpone the first paragraph relating to the number of members to be allowed each state in the first instance, and to take up the second paragraph authorizing the legislature to alter the number from time to time according to wealth and inhabitants. The motion was agreed to.
So what we're looking at here, they're talking about allowing the legislature to play with that allocation of what the number is to be for representation. They wanted to literally give Congress the ability to do that. But we've already read to you Article 1, Section 2, that states every 30,000 people, one representative shall not represent anything greater than 30,000 people. So they don't have the power to change that.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So then they move to postpone, right, relating the number of members to allow in each state the first instance, and take up the second paragraph authorizing the legislature to alter the number from time to time according to that. The motion was agreed on without it, so NEMCON means without any contrary discussion or whatever, just carried. So boom, they went ahead, and Mr. Sherman then moved to refer to the first part apportioning the representatives to a committee of a member from each state. So in other words, they needed to now create a committee out of the convention, all the delegates. They needed to create a new committee to basically deal with the apportioning of the representatives by this committee for the first, in referring to the first body, okay? So Mr. Governor seconded it, observing that it was the only case in which such committees were useful. Mr. Williams of North Carolina basically said this. Now, this is what was injected before they voted. Go ahead.
Mr. Williams thought it would be necessary to return to the rule of numbers, but that the Western states stood on a different footing. If their property shall be rated as high as that of the Atlantic states, then their representation ought to hold a like proportion. Otherwise, if their property was not to be equally rated.
Ah, so now the South wanted to start identifying that not all property could be equal, even though they wanted it to be equal, or at least to use that for the measure of apportionment and representation. Isn't this interesting? So, obviously, we're going into break. So, this is where, you know, they started dividing themselves, at least regarding these same principles, that these principles couldn't be universal. And if you're trying to create a government and you can't create universal principles, you're going to have problems governing. So we'll be right back and diving into this more. They won't solve it now. We'll be right back.
If you listen to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the Republic Review model on ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416.
Okay, so, again, we're kind of finding this little point where they're trying to get their bread buttered on every side they possibly can. Can you imagine that?
Now, I mean, they've just started doing that from the very beginning, so yes.
Well, so, I mean, we see them doing it today. Government and people that have the power, oh, we can make the decisions, let's make it better for us. Who cares? Let's screw the new guy. Okay, so now Mr. Williams of North Carolina thought it would be necessary to return to the rule of numbers, like what you just said and what you just read, but that the Western states stood on different footing. If their property shall be rated as high as that of the Atlantic states, then their representation ought to hold a like proportion, otherwise, if their property was not to be equally rated. So in other words, I think he's going down this. He's pointing out that, hey, you know, we need to fix this so that, you know, this can't happen. At least that's what I'm believing. Mr. Morris of Pennsylvania then says this. Go ahead.
The report is little more than a guess. Wealth was not altogether disregarded by the committee, where it was apparently in favor of one state whose numbers were superior to the numbers of another by infraction only. A member extraordinary was allowed to the former, and so vice versa. The committee met little more than to bring the matter to a point for the consideration of the House.
In other words, the body, the whole, the entire convention. Okay, so Mr. Reed then pipes in and says this.
Mr. Reed asked why Georgia was allowed two members when her number of inhabitants had stood below that of Delaware.
They're already fighting over crumbs now. See?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so Governor Morris said this.
Governor Morris, such is the rapidity of the population of the state that before the plan takes effect, it will probably be entitled to two representatives.
Based on 40, so they were just going to go ahead and grant them the one. Now, technically, when we look at Delaware, because they didn't know Delaware's proper population, but guess who does? GR does. And so GR knew that, because I'm looking at it, when they did the census of 1790, Delaware had 59,000 people. So technically, they should have had two representatives, right? Because the way it works is 30,000, you know, one representative cannot represent more than 30,000. So Delaware was going to get two. And they didn't have much room to grow because they just had enough room for 1,000 before they got their third representative. Today, in the very beginning, they had three representatives. Today, they have one. Just like Wyoming. Now, they're more populated than Wyoming, but today they have one. How about that?
That's interesting.
So here's the thing, folks. when we look at how proportionment is supposed to work and how we're really to have this equal representation, the state that has the smallest population, which is which state?
Wyoming.
Wyoming, that's correct. So when we look at the state with the least population, and let me tell you all of the states that have one representative. South Dakota, Wyoming, North Dakota, Alaska, Vermont, Delaware, and the one that's not a state that shouldn't have a representative or an elector for representative is the District of Columbia. All yes. other states have two or more. So in other words, Wyoming being the least populated, now if you look at the numbers of population today, and I only have the numbers of population by county, so I can't give you what every state's population is, but I quickly drill into the counties for you. I have a spreadsheet for that, but I'm gonna guess to say that South Dakota is pushing close because Montana in the last census popped over to two representatives. Mm. And so, but here's the thing. The number of what it takes for representation is constantly changed by Congress because they have granted themselves this whimsical power of deciding how what those numbers are going to be instead of following the Constitution and saying it will be this amount, period. Because in so doing, they can create the numbers. Now, what would happen if all of a sudden, because the population goes up a little bit and shifts, all of a sudden Montana still, you know, they still have greater than the old number, but not as much as the other, not as much as this new number, where Montana would actually lose a representation and some other states that have two representatives would lose their representation. What would those states be? Well, it could be Virginia, could be, well, it won't be Idaho, but New Hampshire, could be New Hampshire or Maine or, well, not Hawaii or Rhode Island. Those are the two, those are the states with two numbers. And I don't think that Rhode Island or any of these states would appreciate the fact that they would go down to only one representative as they go along their own discrimination of discerning, oh, well, we want to make it 1 million even. And all of a sudden, Montana would probably not have 1 million in its population where it would be granted the two. I don't know. But my point is the way they're handling it, it can easily swing back and forth. And they're not, this is the madness. What is the whole point of apportionment for the House of Representatives? What is the whole point? It is to give the people suffrage. Mm-hmm. Are they increasing the suffrage of the people the way they're playing with the numbers, or are they actually taking away the suffrage of the people?
Yeah, taken away.
Absolutely. The more it takes to get a representative, the less suffrage you have. Folks, the perfect representation for giving you maximum suffrage would be 1-for-1. Now, that's not reasonable, is it?
No.
Okay. All right. Which is one of the reasons why no state was formed by a 1-for-1 representation in their constitutional conventions. They sent delegates based on population of the counties, and each county had one vote, and they would vote by delegation. So, at least that's how it should have been. That's how our representation mm-hmm. was done, and that's how we should have moved forward as that standard. And the only way that should have actually been ingrained in the Constitution so that Congress couldn't even meddle with that. Because obviously they like meddling with things to create advantages and they like to change things. But guess what? It's not just Congress, it's the courts. The courts have loved to redefine the Constitution. They've loved doing that. And as a matter of fact, they loved bending the laws and so forth. So the intent behind this whole argument and what these guys are doing and why it comes down to this. And at the very end, I'm going to spoil it for you. Washington says that he doesn't believe the people can be properly represented by 40,000, which is why the Constitution has 30. Washington and these men were really trying to create the best representation they could for the people while making it reasonable. Okay, so let's go back to where you left off, which is what Mr. Randolph.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Randolph disliked the report of the committee, but had been unwilling to object to it. He was apprehensive that the number was not to be changed till the national legislature should please. A pretext would never be wanting to postpone alterations and keep the power in the hands of those possessed of it. He was in favor of the committee, the commitment?
Yes,
the committee?
A commitment to a member from each state. In other words, okay, that each state should have at least a minimum of one representative. I believe, that could be a member of each state into the committee, because they were talking about creating the committee to do this. Okay, so Mr. Patterson of New Jersey then, hey, let's take a left turn into property. So let's see what Mr. Patterson wants to talk about property now. Because remember, they're trying to determine representation and apportionment and levying tax based on either property or people.
Okay. Considered the proposed estimate for the future according to the combined rule of numbers and wealth as too vague, for this reason, New Jersey was against it. He could regard Negroes, slaves, in no light but as property. They are no free agents, have no personal liberty, no faculty or acquiring property, but on the contrary, are themselves property. Like other property, entirely at the will of the master. Has a man in Virginia a number of votes in proportion to the number of his slaves? And if Negroes are not represented in the states to which they belong, why should they be represented in the general government? What is the true...
Yeah, go ahead. Keep going. Go ahead. Keep going.
What is the true... what is the true principle of representation? Is it an expedient by which an assembly of certain individuals chosen by the people is substituted in place of the inconvenient meeting of the people themselves? If such a meeting of the people was actually to take place, would the slaves vote? They would not. Why then should they be represented? He was also against such an indirect encouragement of the slave trade, observing that Congress in their act relating to the change of the 8th Article of Confederation had been ashamed to use the term slaves and had substituted a description.
So people, again, another insight that they made a calculated decision of political correctness to actually not use the term slave in the Articles of Confederation. So, as I pointed out, the Articles of Association were pretty clean or free of, I'll just say, political correctness, because they spoke out bad about slavery. Then the Articles of Confederation had political correctness, and now the Constitution is getting even more political correctness because we see what ends up happening. But anyway, let's go on with what Mr. Madison wants to inject here.
Mr. Madison reminded Mr. Patterson that his doctrine of representation, which was in its principle, the genuine one, must forever silence the pretensions of the small states to an equality of votes with the large ones. They ought to vote in the same proportion in which their citizens would do if the people of the states were collectively met. He suggested, as a proper ground of compromise, that in the first branch, the states should be represented according to their number of free inhabitants, and in the second, which had for one of its primary objects the guardianship of property, according to the whole number, including slaves.
Madison is actually jumping back into this and saying, hey, you know, let's look at how, because he's the one that actually kind of designed this to do that. And so he goes back to this point because Mr. Patterson was saying, we can't allow slaves to have this vote. And so Madison kind of agrees with him that when we divide this, the House of Representatives in the first house, the House of Representatives, should be based upon the free inhabitants thereof. And that in the second house, that's where they protect their institution of slavery, in the Senate, not not guaranteeing them. But see, the southern states knew. The three southern states, the Carolinas and Georgia, realized where they would end up falling because they wouldn't get the apportionment. Because I believe when I look at these population numbers, this includes slavery. These aren't free inhabitants. This is about representation and apportionment. So again, when I look at, let me see, South Carolina came in with 250,000 and North Carolina came in at almost 400,000. What would their numbers be without slaves? It would be diminished. And so there's a good likelihood that they wouldn't have had the same representation. They were literally trying to get their bread buttered on every side. Does that make sense? Of course, you want to create advantages for you. You're in there to create advantages for your team, for your state. And that's what was going on. But Madison, being in from Virginia, that racist that he was, said, no, we shouldn't be doing that. You got your protection in the second house. This representation is about freeholders. Because he agreed. He just starts off with, that Mr. Patterson's doctrine of representation, which in its principle, the genuine one, he agreed that that is absolutely correct. But he wanted to silence the pretensions of the small states to the quality of votes with the large ones when it comes down to that vote. That's why, hey, you guys got your state equality suffrage there, and we're going to have the population of the freeholders, the free inhabitants, will, basically prevail in the second house. So, okay. All right. So Mr. Butler then piped in. Go ahead.
Mr. Butler urged warmly the justice and necessity of regarding wealth in the apportionment of representation.
Uh-huh. Okay. Mr. King.
Mr. King had always expected that as the southern states are the richest, they would not league themselves with the northern unless some respect were paid to their superior wealth. If the latter expect those preferential distinctions in commerce and other advantages which they will derive from the connection, they must not expect to receive them without allowing some advantages in return. 11 out of 13 of the states had agreed to consider slaves in the apportionment of taxation, and taxation and representation ought to go together.
Okay, so on the question of committing the first paragraph of the report to a member of each state, Massachusetts said yes, Connecticut yes, New York no, New Jersey yes, Pennsylvania yes, Delaware, so it carried. And so they went off to, one person from each state went off into a committee to deal with this. Now we jump down, July 10th, and we go down to the property representation dialogue again, because that will lead us, if you notice, that will actually lead us into the admission of states as well. Because as they start solving these, or they start addressing these problems, they notice that these problems are intertwined. That, how are we going to be represented? Oh, now we need to talk about admitting new states, because there was comments about not having the same rule. Right? Okay, so go ahead. Property representation, and this is Mr. Governor Morris of Pennsylvania. Go ahead.
Regretted the turn of the debate. The states he found had many representatives on the floor. Few, he fears, were to be deemed representatives of America. He thought the southern states have by the report more than their share of representation. Property ought to have its weight, but not all the weight. If the southern states are to supply money, but not all the weight, if the southern states are to supply money, the northern states are to spill their blood. Besides, the probable revenue to be expected from the southern states has been greatly overrated.
Okay. Go ahead. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Les.
He was against reducing
New Hampshire.
New Hampshire.
So here we go. It actually was stated, because if you remember the last comment above, right, the very last comment above basically said that the North had all the money. Right? King said, hey, we already know the southern states are the richest. And we got this league. They'll never be in league with us, but they're going to expect us to go spill our blood. Remember, he said that. And so now that we look at this and we actually dive into this right here, or actually, I think this is where, yeah, no, this is where he adds to that. He says, not only are they the richest, but we're the ones that are going to have to go fight. This is where they start talking about the elephant in the room, how slavery is a liability to the Union. Get rid of it. Mm-hmm. Because you guys can't fight, and because you're more interested in protecting your property and your money than your liberty. And as far as I'm concerned, I think it was a huge mistake allowing those three states to inject slavery. Again, hindsight being 2020, most everybody in that room really felt that America needed to maintain the union of all 13 states. And I believe that led us into exactly what ended up happening, where the political posturing of the Missouri Compromise and all this other crap just made it and delayed it and delayed it and delayed it until we actually blew at the seams into the Civil War. Okay, so anyway, Mr. Randolph.
Mr. Randolph was opposed to reduction of New Hampshire, not because she had a full title to three members, but because it was his contemplation, one, to make it the duty instead of leaving it in, discretion of the legislature to regulate the representation by a periodical census, two, to require more than a bare majority of votes in the legislature in certain cases, and particularly in commercial cases.
Okay, so, go ahead. And on the question for reducing New Hampshire from 3 to 2, it passed in the negative. So in other words, they weren't going to reduce them from 3 to 2. Right? Is that what I get? Yeah, Massachusetts, Connecticut. Yeah. No. The only states that actually voted for it were which states?
North Carolina and South Carolina.
Yes.
South Carolina.
So the two ardent supporters of slavery, Georgia was on the south of them, so they were stuck, right? Georgia at this point in time didn't have huge plantations. At least not like North and South Carolina and Virginia. Why? Because Georgia, and I believe I've mentioned this before, that Georgia was really created as a strategic state to protect the northern states. So instead of the allotment of land for indentured servants that were being released from the penal colony to come to America for their liberties, in other words, they would be forced to work, you know, as a slave or indentured servants for 7 years. And then once they finished their term of labor, they were granted 10 acres of land instead of 100. The reason that was done was to create a denser population so that when if Spain decided to march north into the British colonies, that Georgia would be like a little booby trap or at least a landmine to slow them down so that the word could get to the northern states, the Spaniards are coming.
Mm.
Now, Spain, by this point in time, in the 1700s, Spain, we're talking 1780s actually, Spain was no longer really a threat. I mean, they got kicked in the pants at the end of the 16th century. It was 1592? Or it was 1606, I think. Somewhere in there, when the Spanish Armada was basically handed its tail by the British crown. And this is when Britain basically became, or was on its way to becoming, the empire of the world. And so Spain, we're talking now, almost 200 years later, Spain wasn't any closer to wanting to poke the bear.
Mm-hmm.
And so they weren't really a threat, but at least Georgia was created in such a way that they didn't have large money pots in plantations because the majority of the plots were 10 acres. So, and that was your property. That was your wealth. That was everything. So people, you know, struggled in having slaves because they couldn't, they didn't get the, what do they call that? They weren't able to reduce their marginal cost because they didn't have a larger property where, you know, they could get more slaves. So bottom line, they were really capped economically, which is one of the reasons why North Carolina, South Carolina, and Virginia were considered the real money states. They were the big commercial endeavors. So Governor Pinckney now kind of steps up and moved that 6 representatives instead of 5 be allowed to North Carolina, protecting his interest, right? And so on the question, it passed on the negative. In other words, it did pass. It was basically shot down. Then Governor Pinckney said he made the same motion in favor of South Carolina, and that didn't pass. And if you look at who's voted for it, it was the slave states, North Carolina, South Carolina, and Georgia. And then they couldn't get it to pass again. So they were already receiving the sentiment that all of the other states out of the 11 or 12, 11, 10 or 11, what is that? Let me see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. So there were 2 states that were out. Rhode Island was out, and I forget, New York is there. I'd have to figure out who the other state isn't there. But Rhode Island, we know, wasn't there. And there was somebody, there was another state that didn't stay. Delaware's there. Connecticut's there. Who's missing? Help me out. I'll figure it out because I've got the list here. Okay,
New Hampshire.
So. Is New Hampshire not there?
NH?
Yes. New Hampshire departed. And because they didn't have a lot of money either. They didn't have slaves. New Hampshire was one of the states that couldn't afford representation in Congress. They couldn't afford to send a delegate to Philadelphia for, what, 4 or 5 months. So
yeah.
they basically took the easy way out and saying, we don't think this represents us. We think you guys are going down a path that doesn't represent the commission. But the reality is that they rubber stamped the Constitution as a state. In other words, they didn't challenge whether it complied or didn't comply to the commission. They realized that it was a security blanket for their sovereignty from the big states being able to take over, which is why every small state voted for it, except for Massachusetts. We didn't do it because of that. They did it for their own purposes. So running out of time here. And so thank you so much. We'll pick this up where we just left off here. And with that, excuse me, I'll clear my throat when I'm all done here. Bottom line, what you're reading, and you were actually getting to these key hot points of the Constitutional Convention, and was truly about slavery. Slavery was the biggest drag on this nation and this convention. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.